welcome to Eastlake. I'm Robin. I'm the lead pastor. This is a church for everyone, even people that like Jackass clips. Grab your notes if you would. We're talking about today how to be in the right place at the right time. So much of life is about timing. So write the big idea, if you would, in your notes. God puts you in the right place at the right time because you can be in the wrong place at the right time. Be in the wrong place at the right time. When I was in junior high school, I wasn't much of a dancer. So I don't know if you, like in junior high school, if you're at dances, normally the girls are pretty good dancers already by junior high school, or at least they like to dance. So, you know, as the dances, like in my school where I lived, they turned the gymnasium into a dance floor, and the girls would be talking about the dance forever. It's like, the dance is coming, the dance is coming. And everybody knows that most men only like to slow dance anyways. No men really like to fast dance, especially junior high guys, but girls, I don't know what it is about them. They just like see themselves as dancers, like right off the bat, and guys don't because they're self-conscious, except for my friend Rory. Now, my friend Rory, he saw himself as a dancer. He had all the moves, you know, the moves you have when you're a dancing guy. You know, Rory would get out there. He wasn't self-conscious, and he would always dance. He was known as the dancer in our school. So he'd be out there dancing, but it was a little awkward because there was no, like, other guys to dance along with him when he danced. And he was my best friend. So Rory's out there dancing with his girlfriend one time, and he pulls this girl out of the stands, you know, because everybody at our school, they had those bleachers that pull out, and the girls would be on one side, and the guys would be on the other, and the guys would be sitting up there, and they're like, I'm not going out on that dance floor, you know, there'd be like bets going on. But the girls, they would want to dance. Well, he went and got this one girl, and his girlfriend, and they went out towards the dance, and he's looking up in the crowd, and he sees me. He sees me up there, and I am like the last guy ever, and in front of the entire, not a plan now, in front of the entire school, 7th and 8th grade, my friend Rory comes up into the bleachers and says, come on out and dance. And now everybody in the bleachers is like, go, 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 go. I've already peed my pants because I was like, I don't dance, you know. Now, one thing about girls, when girls are going to like go to the dance floor, like guys walk to the dance floor like this. You know, they're just like stiff and they can hardly go out there even to this day. You go to a club. But girls, they start dancing before they even get to the dance floor. Girls are like dancing like on the way to the dance floor, you know. They're like, we're dancing now. And guys are more like, I'll start dancing when I cross the dreaded line, not before, because I'm not a dancer. And Rory pulls me up out of the stands. You know, go, 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 you know, what are you going to do, you know? Wrong place at the wrong time. I mean, onto the dance floor, and there she is, and she's already dancing, having a good time. She thinks it's great, and I look like the Tin Man. You know, I didn't even mean to be doing the robot, and I was, because I'm so incredibly awkward. And you can be at the wrong place at the wrong time or the right place at the right time. Maybe you were at your job and you wanted a promotion and just the right person took another job and it opened up something for you. You know, you want the big, big, big screen TV set. You wait and wait and wait and wait and you've already convinced your wife we're going to buy it. You walk into Best Buy and they have it on sale and you know God has said, buy it today. But wrong times can happen too. And today we're going to talk about, because it's such an important part of life, do you know there's lots of people all around us here that they don't know that Jesus wants to help them carry the load. And I'm not just talking to the guys, because guys know the load, but girls, there's a load that we carry. And their idea of Jesus is that he wants to put a load on you, not take a load off you. Their idea of church is if I go to church, I'm just going to go to church and I'll find out a bunch of stuff I can't do, a bunch of stuff I should do. I'll probably leave with more of a load than I even came in with. And what's shocking for people is that Jesus wants to help us with the load, even make the load lighter. And one of the ways he does that is create timing for us. He puts us in the right place at the right time. Now, Kalani mentioned we're in the book of Mark. Four books in the Bible about Jesus, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. These four people wrote a biography about Jesus. Mark was the youngest, and he was the ex-church guy. So he's the guy that grew up in church. And then as soon as he got old enough, he left God and church behind and went out on his own. He's building his adult life. No church, no God at all. I had to go when my parents were there, but I don't go anymore. That's Mark. And then he runs into Jesus, and Jesus says, well, I understand why you wouldn't go to church and maybe why you wouldn't want religion, but I'm offering a relationship, and Mark takes it. And he writes the story about Jesus from this perspective. You can have a relationship with Jesus. He writes the whole story about that. One of the things he discovered was that Jesus can create timing. So we're going to read a story in his story today about timing, and look in your notes and we'll read it. I'm going to read the whole thing to you, then we'll go back. Once again, Jesus went out beside the lake. A large crowd came to him, and he began to teach them. As he walked along, he saw Levi. Now, his name is also Matthew, so I might call him Matthew or Levi. Levi, son of Alphaeus, sitting at the tax collector's booth. Follow me, Jesus told him. And Levi got up and followed him. Now, while Jesus was having dinner at Levi Matthew's house, many tax collectors and sinners were eating with him and his disciples, for there were many who followed him. When the teachers of the law, who were Pharisees, saw him eating with sinners and tax collectors, they asked his disciples, notice not Jesus, why does he eat with tax collectors and sinners? On hearing this, Jesus said to them, it is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners. Now go to talk again. Circle in your notes if you have a pen once again. I hope you grab notes. We always tease the guys here because guys don't like to take notes, but you know, circle that because it's good to have notes. Once again, and isn't life filled with a lot of once agains? Once again, I got to get the kids up and get them off to school. Once again, I got to try to make it to work on time. Once again, the bills come in. I got to find enough money to pay all the bills. Once again, I said the wrong thing to my girlfriend, and now we're having a little fight when I thought we were going to have a good night. Once again, I have to explain why I'm late. Once again, I mean, there are so many once agains in life because life is a process. It's once again, once again, once again. And Jesus is in the middle of a process. He lives in this town called Capernaum. It's a fishing town. And here's what Jesus would do. He'd hang around in his hometown, and he would tell people about having a relationship with God, and then he would leave, and he'd kind of go on a little tour around, and like a band does, and people would go with him, and then he'd come back. And he would leave and come back, leave and come back, leave and come back, and now he's back. And the reason he did that was because he wanted everybody to have an opportunity to process whether or not they even wanted a relationship with God. Everybody's processing. It's a process. And so he would go and come back, because people were processing. And one of the ways that, and he was so good about this, one of the ways that he did it is it seemed like he was always available because he would go and come back. He was always there. And God is always available as you're processing. And so once again, here Jesus is, he's gone and he's come back, and everybody has a new opportunity, as you do today. I thought about God, and then I didn't, now I'm thinking about God again. That's what it was like, and they have a new opportunity. They're thinking about God, is he going to be a part of my life once again? And there's a crowd there. And there's a crowd that's in my life and in your life. There's all the different people that are in our lives, the people we work with in our family. There's this little crowd. Some have big crowds, some don't, and there was this large crowd around Jesus. And everyone in the crowd was at a different spot in terms of having a relationship with him. They're all at a different spot, and that's how crowds are. You know, and you have a crowd in your life, and everybody in your life is at a different position, a different spot in terms of having a relationship with Jesus. And they may not talk about God ever. And they may never talk about Jesus. They may never, ever talk about church. But everybody is at a different position in this crowd. They come out to see Jesus. Now here comes the crowd. They're all at a different position because everybody is. They're all in process. And this crowd would come together. And here comes the crowd. They're going to be with Jesus, this big, large crowd. And they're all at a different place. And Jesus was okay with that. So just make a note to yourself. It's okay to process. That's the whole part of the story. It's okay to process. You can process, process, process. This is a great place to process. And so this crowd is processing. They're wondering about Jesus. Do we want anything to do with Jesus? I remember last time, some of the things they said, oh, he's here again. What do I think? And you'll notice in your life as you process that all of a sudden a day will come and you'll be thinking more about the Lord than you have in several days in your process. And so here he is now. He's with this crowd. And in this crowd, and here's another thing, you don't always know in your crowd how close people are. Because there's one person in this crowd that's way closer than anybody thinks. He's Levi the tax collector. Now picture in your mind the tax collector. It's tax season right now, right? And none of us really like taxes. I mean, like when you look at your check and you see your taxes, you think to yourself, they take too much of my money. I mean, nobody really likes taxes, and this is the time of year for some people you can get some money back, but taxes is one of those words that nobody really likes. You know, it's like the word tonsillitis, you know. There's just different words. You say the word tonsillitis, you know, circumcision. Nobody likes that word, you know. It's just like there's different words. Nobody likes those words. Nobody likes the word taxes. Taxes, nobody wants taxes. And this guy is a tax collector. Tax collector. So, you're the person that collects, and you're involved in the thing that nobody likes. And here's what they would do with the tax collectors in this day. They would sit at a toll area where you had to pass by, and this is a fishing community, so you had to pay taxes on your fishes. They'd be in a big high chair, kind of like a lifeguard chair, and you had to pass by there on the road, and you had to pay them money. So everybody sees them. Now, here's the problem. The tax collectors were Jewish, but the king wasn't Jewish, and he used to overtax everybody. And the way he did it is he recruited these Jewish people that wanted to become rich, and he said, your job is to collect the taxes. Here's the amount that I want. I don't care how much you collect. You can collect as much as you want as long as I get my share, and here's my army to back you up. So Matthew, this guy, would collect way more taxes. So maybe you've already got your taxes done. How would you like if somebody came to your house, knocked on the door, and said, you know what? Turns out I redid your taxes and you owe $5,000 more. Well, I can't pay it. Then you'll have to go to jail. I'm not going to jail. Well, these four guys with the guns say you are. That's Matthew. Every day, every day, every day. Tax collector. So nobody likes Matthew. In fact, if you're in the crowd and you look out there and you see Matthew, you probably thought, what's he doing here? I don't know if you've ever been somewhere before and you've seen somebody there and thought, what's that guy doing here? Who let him in? Nobody wants to be with Matthew. In fact, even some of the disciples who are fishermen, they don't want anything to do with Matthew because he's probably taxed them too much money. Matthew is the guy, listen to this now, he's the guy that nobody wants. He's a guy that nobody wants anything to do with. That's Matthew. That's Levi. He's the tax collector. So you have to think about it. When you think about guys that are in the right place at the right time, it's not this guy. If you were to pick anybody out of the crowd and say, you know what? I bet he's the guy that's going to receive Jesus today and start a relationship. You never would have picked him. Ever. So Mark is going to tell this story, and he's saying, you know, you never know about time and place when it comes to God, because I remember the day that I saw Levi. And one thing I want to say to you about time and place, there's my perspective and there's God's. Years ago when the kids were little, we had this house in one part of town, and the kids were going to a school in the other part of town. We had a small church building. We've only really ever been in like one church, and it's kind of started like this, and then it grew, and we had to buy property and build buildings. And that church is kind of how we ended up here. We bought some property quite a ways away. And so we all lived in the wrong area of town. And so we're like, well, we got to get over. We're going to build the church buildings, and we've got our kids' school over there. The problem was, you know, our house is, how are we going to sell them? You know, so I get a realtor. He appraises my house. He says, listen, you don't have a chance to sell this house. I mean, you are so upside down in this house. There's no way you can sell this house. And so Clarice and I, we want to move to a completely different area of town. It's quite a ways away. And we're stuck in this house, and I remember thinking to myself, there is no way this can happen. There's no chance this can happen for us at all. And then a friend of mine, not a close friend, came in from left field. He stopped me after church one day, and he said, you know, as I've been praying, God talked to me, and he said he wants me to help you relocate. And he ended up buying our house. There was enough money for us to buy another house. And all of a sudden, and here's the point, when Jesus says it's the time and place, it's the time and place. He can set that. You may be at a time in your life right now because I went bankrupt, or I didn't go to school, or my relationship isn't so good. I haven't lost as much weight as I went. The thing that you want to see happen in your life, you've already said to yourself, the timing's not right for it. It can't happen for me. And that's how I felt when I would go home every night to my house. I'd go, gosh, man, how are we going to do this? But it's never going to happen because the timing isn't right. And here's the note to make. If Jesus says the timing's right, the timing's right. If Jesus says the timing's right, the timing's right. If Jesus says the timing is right, the timing will be right. And it is for Levi. All of a sudden, you know, Levi, the tax man, nobody picks him, nobody wants him. And it says that Levi gets up immediately. And there's this great example in the Old Testament about this person named Abraham. And Abraham is married to this woman named Sarah. It's way back before Jesus. It's a Jewish story. And it seems like the timing is right in his life. Everything's happening well. He's rich. He's got the perfect wife. Everything's going very well. But he doesn't have any children. So it's that time in your life where everything seems to be clicking, but there's this one thing that you can't get to line up. No matter what you try, just can't get the timing to line up, and he can't have any children. I'm sure they tried and tried and tried. I had a friend that him and his wife couldn't have any children. He said the only good part about it was is the doctor told his wife that they had to try a lot, so that's the part he liked about it. But the rest of the part of it he didn't like because there was no baby, and that's Abraham. And he's so frustrated because he doesn't have any children. In his culture, if you didn't have a big family, people thought you were jinxed. And so he has no children. He gets so desperate. They have this housekeeper that works with him. Her name is Hagar. That he sleeps with the housekeeper, and they have a child. And he thinks, okay, now I have my baby. And God says, that's your timing, not mine. I don't know if you ever pulled one of those off. You can't wait. And you said, oh, the timing's now. And then you get done and you find out, oh, the timing wasn't. So now you have a stepbaby you have to raise and your wife is not happy. And he still doesn't have his baby. Now here's the interesting twist. When the baby finally arrives, so here comes the baby Isaac. He has this baby and God says the strangest thing to him. He says, in that day they used to sacrifice to people. So today we bring offerings. But they used to sacrifice an animal. They'd bring their animals because there was no money. And this is how I show that I love you, God, and you love me, and you're my provider. So they bring something. And God says, bring your son. So he's been waiting and waiting and waiting, and God says, bring your son. So if you think about it now, here's my point. When you're waiting for timing in life, sometimes God's timing can seem so crazy. And he says to him, bring your son. And Abraham is a little apprehensive. He's like, well, God, what are you doing? I don't get your timing. And here's why he did it. He was so focused on his family, and he was so focused on having a son. When he finally got what he desired, and which was his family, here's where Abraham was. He started to believe that it was his responsibility to control the time and place for his family. Abraham started to be the kind of person that decided it was his job to make sure that everything worked out for his family. It was his responsibility to do time and place. And God showed him, he said, listen, I'm in charge of your son. And he just shook him and showed him that I decide timing. And so everybody in the crowd, they're really shocked. They see Levi get up and they go and they go, who would have ever thought? And I want to ask the question, in your life, if you were going to pick one person and they were the person that you would never think would be close to God, just think in your mind who it might be. Because he might be closer than you think. Now, Levi gets up. We read the story. Once again, Jesus went out beside the lake. A large crowd came to him. He began to teach them. He walked along. He saw Levi, son of Alphaeus, sitting in the tax collector's booth. Follow me, Jesus told him. And Levi got up and followed him. Now, let's look at the last part of the story. While Jesus was having dinner at Levi's house, so he throws some real, real big party for him. Many tax collectors and sinners were eating with him and his disciples, for there were many who followed him. So now Levi decides to have this party, and there's all these different people. And we're having a party today after church. We call it 101, and we explain why we do church the way we do church. This may be news. You know, 50 to 75% of the people in our area today aren't in church anywhere. They may belong to a church, but they're not going to a church anywhere at all. And there's a reason why they're not going to church. Because when they think of church, they don't think of it as a place where they'll be able to connect with God. And so they don't go at all. And so we started this church to be a certain type of church so those people would come. And you've heard me say a million times, everyone can come here. And I've used this illustration before. We don't tell people where to sit here, nor do we hang any signs in the room. But some people feel like if they came here, that's what it'd be like. So when you went to church, what you're reminded of is, oh, everybody that's ever went bankrupt. Can you imagine if you came into this room and there were signs hanging down? Everyone that's ever been bankrupt, you have to sit over there. Everybody that has unruly kids that won't mind, here's your little group over here. Anybody that's been divorced, oh, you come and sit over here. Anybody that's in debt, oh, you sit over there. Anybody that's been married more than once, you sit over here. And it was just all around the room. You put it in your different categories. And Levi throws this party, and it says that that tax collectors and sinners come to his party. And they all show up there, and they're all having this party time. And let's see what happens here. When the teachers of the law, who were Pharisees, saw him eating with the sinners and tax collectors, they asked his disciples, not Jesus, why does he eat with tax collectors and sinners? And here's why. When they got to the party, and it's interesting that he invited these church people, when they got to the party, the people that were there weren't who they expected. I remember a long, long time ago, when I first started going to church, it was very refreshing. People accepted me, and I was going through college. I was working as a waiter, and there was this one guy there that just wasn't very nice to me at all. And he was always, you know, sort of putting me down, and he didn't think I was a very good waiter. And, you know, the truth of it was, he didn't like me, and I wasn't so hot on him either. And then one day I get to church on a Sunday morning, and I get there, and I see him walking up the sidewalk having the nerve to attend my church. And I'm like, what? Now, when I came to church with all my problems and my baggage and everything, I thought it was a great place that they would be so accepting for someone like me. But when he started to come to church, this guy that I didn't like, and I remember when he first came there, I was so distracted, I couldn't even hardly sing. I was like, look at him over there, acting like he belongs in church. Just 2 nights ago, he was saying all kinds of things to me. And, you know, and is there anybody that could have walked in this morning? And honestly, you might have said to yourself, what are they doing in church? The last person you'd see in church. I mean, I know I'm here, but... And he kept coming every Sunday, every Sunday, every Sunday. Dave Dixon, every Sunday, every Sunday. And he didn't really change much of the way he treated me at work, and he would show up at church. Now, these guys, they get to this party of Levites, and they see Jesus, and they see all these sinners. They had this classification. And I don't know if you've ever been classified by anybody or been in the wrong class of people. When I was in high school, there was the stoners, and there was the jocks, and there was the cowboys, and we used to call them goat ropers. And then I guess you could call them the sinners. We never called them that, but they were the ones that, you know, and it was they were the ones that were doing all the stuff that everybody kind of knew, you know, and you were doing it too, but you kept it a better secret. And they were the sinners, you know, classification. How would you like it if you were in the group and all you were known as is the sinners? I mean, that's who these people were. They were just known as the sinners. And they get there and they go, well, why would Jesus be with all these sinners? I mean, you know, they're not in the right class of people. Now, if you come today to 101 afterwards, we'll have lunch and childcare, it'll all be provided and stuff. We'll tell you why we started a church for sinners. Why we wanted to be a place where just people that are far from God could come and feel comfortable. And when they get to this party, they can't understand why the sinners are there. And Jesus tells them why. Let's keep reading. He says, why does he eat with sinners? On hearing this, so Jesus overhears them, Jesus said to them, it's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I've not come to call the righteous, but to call sinners. And here's what he's saying. He said, I'm here for anybody that recognizes their need. I'm not here for any class of people. I'm not here for anybody with a particular background. I'm here for anyone and everyone that recognizes their need. Anybody that can admit, I have a need. It doesn't matter what class you come from. It doesn't matter what anybody else says about you. If you recognize your need, I'm here for you. Which was completely opposite of the religion of the day, because the religion of the day was more like, we need you, and Jesus came and said, I want you to need me. That's my criteria. Now look at a couple points of application on the back. The first one is, watch for your moment of decision. I grew up and had a lot of different father figures, although I didn't have a full-time dad, and one of them's name was Don Moore. And he was in my family, my foster family, like my brothers and sisters. I admired him a heap. He was a great athlete. He was always at our games. And when he got older, he had a stroke. And it really changed his life dramatically. He couldn't talk. He wasn't as physical. It was a big thing for our family when Don had his stroke. And it wasn't long before he had to be in a nursing home and have full-time care. And I would visit him, and we just continued on our relationship. But it was going downhill. You could just see it. It was very, very quickly. And Mom called and said, we used to call him Don. I called him Don. Don wants to see you right away in the nursing home. And I knew instantly what it was. I'd never had any kind of discussion with him about Jesus. And my family, I was the only person somehow that ended up in a relationship with Jesus. I just was the only one, and nobody else did, and I was the only one. And they all knew that I did. And so when I got the call to go see Don, I knew what it was. I knew he'd come to the end, and I just absolutely knew. And it was one of the best days of my life when I drove quite a distance. And I'll always remember, I was supposed to be there at 6 o'clock, and I was 5 minutes late. And I can't remember whose fault that was, but we'll just leave it at that. But anyways, I was late. I got there late. And it was 5 minutes after 6, and Don couldn't speak hardly at all, but he was in bed, wide awake, and he was yelling at me the best he could, pointing to the clock, you know, and he was yelling because I was late. And I said, I know. I didn't try to defend myself. And in the next couple minutes, I explained to him just very, very simply that, Don, it doesn't matter what's happened up until now. It doesn't matter how much time has gone by. It doesn't matter how you see yourself or what anybody else says about you. Jesus wants you if you need him. In his own way, he prayed with me, and he gave his life to Jesus right at that moment. And Don was gone a week later. And when I did his funeral, his memorial, I knew where Don was. And he'd reached a moment of decision. And we all reach moments of decision. And the best way to be prepared for a choice is to think about it before it arrives. Way before the choice hits you and the decision comes, be thinking about it. What choice am I going to make? I wonder how many times Levi had set up in his little lifeguard stand and had seen the crowd go by with Jesus and wondered. And maybe he thought about Jesus and thought, oh, there's no way I could fit him into my life, and he'd never let me be a part of his life. And maybe they sneered at him. You know, maybe he looked at the crowd and he thought, that motley crew, I could be with them. But then maybe he saw Peter and John, the disciples, who were the fishermen that he overtaxed, and maybe they looked at him as they walked by, and maybe they kind of sneered at him a little bit like, yeah, you're the one, I don't have as much money like I should. And maybe he saw and he thought, there's no way I could fit in with Jesus. Maybe it happened lots and lots and lots of times, and maybe he thought, there's just no way, but he was thinking about it. But when his moment of decision came, and here's what I want you to understand, Jesus controls the moment of decision, not you. You may think, I am so far away from it, there's no chance for me. Everything is stacked against me at this point. And then all of a sudden, Jesus will just decide the time is now. And will you be ready for your moment of decision? Because here's Levi. All of a sudden, Jesus stops everybody, doesn't ask anybody's opinion. He says, Levi, how about right now? And because he's been thinking about the choice, he's ready for his moment of decision. What should you be thinking about? Maybe it's too painful. Maybe you think it's never going to happen. Maybe it seems like it's too far away. But what should you be thinking about? Because what if Jesus were to catch you by surprise? What if he were to say, right now? Would you be ready for your moment of decision? And then here's the second thing is, good is never good enough. Here's the trap. I either feel self-defeated or I feel conceited. If goodness is the mark, I either walk around all the time feeling like I'm never good enough, I'm never good enough, never good enough, or even more dangerous, I feel like, you know what, I am good enough. I am doing well. And when Mark put this story in, he kind of put two bookends. He said, here's the people over on this side, and their problem is they think all the timing is based on goodness, and so timing never works out for them because they never see themselves as good enough. And maybe you're in that camp. And you know what I've noticed is that it's not like it's an ongoing personality trait, because some days I feel okay up until about 10:30, and then I do some stupid thing at work, and then I feel not good enough. And so the rest of the day I struggle with believing that God would do anything for me. And then I say my prayers at night, and I ask forgiveness, and I try to get a clean slate, and then the whole thing starts again tomorrow, and about half the way day through, I'm like, God, why do I feel like such a piece of crap? And I can't believe that God would do anything for me. And the problem is, the trap is, I'm basing timing on goodness, mine. And that's a trap. Or you can go like the people that made the classifications, the church leaders. You can decide, do you know why I think they called the group the sinners? Because if I can classify people a certain way, you're the sinners and I'm not. If I can make you out to be the bad guy, then I'm not. Where I work at, there's a lot of trouble with honesty, and I've been finding myself lately losing the battle. And I don't know if you ever do this at work, but you just sort of name the people. Oh, he's a liar, he's a liar, he's a fat liar, that guy's a fat liar. You're doing this all in your mind, and you just classify people along. I don't like him, I don't like them, that's a lie. Oh, he probably lied to get that sale. I know. And you just sort of classify him. Here's what you're really saying is, I'm not. It feels so good to say what you are, because then I get to feel like I'm not a liar. And the truth is, yes, I am. I'm an inch away from lying all the time if I'm not connected with Jesus, because I'm just like you. And I think the church leaders were like that. They're like, sinners! And they were just like, not us. And that's when Jesus told me, he said, that's a problem. Because you don't recognize your need. You know, the best thing about having a relationship with Jesus is I'm free from sin and I'm not afraid to admit it. All my life I had to pretend that I don't do anything wrong, because if I just allowed myself to face it for a moment, I felt so bad about myself. But Jesus, I can say, yes, I am, but you still care and love me. I can recognize my need. And there's the two traps now. The one trap is, because of goodness, you can never do anything for me, God. Because of goodness, you'll do a lot for me, God, because I'm good. And that's a trap. Now, here's the bottom line in today's story. God makes the appointment, but only you can keep the appointment. You've heard this story, I'm sure everybody's heard it, but I like to tell it every once in a while just so you can hear it. It's a story about the little boy that he's swimming out at the beach. His parents have a beach house that they go down to for a week. And he goes out and he swims and he hangs out and he looks for things. And where they're at, the tide goes in and out, tide goes in and out. And so he starts to notice that when the tide's out, it's completely different than when the tide's in. And he likes to walk around and look at things. And while he's there, when the tide goes out, there's all these starfish that are left, they're not in the water. And something happened one day that the tide went out very, very early, and it didn't come back in all the way, so some of the starfish didn't get covered back with water. And he goes home and he tells his parents, and like, hey, go play, go play. Because you know how you are with your kids sometimes. You just pretend you hear them, but you don't. Mommy, mommy, there's a Doberman Pinscher that's got salad and dragon nose. Yeah, go get it. You just kind of do that to him. And so his parents did that, like all parents do. And he goes back outside and he sees these starfish, and they're like starting to get hard, and he's concerned about them. So there's a lot of them, by the way. So he goes in and he gets a bucket. He goes in, he gets a bucket, and he comes out, and he starts putting these starfish in this bucket. He's got some water in it. He's walking along, he's putting these starfish, and he's going back out, and he's dumping them into the water, and he's doing this. And there's this jogger guy coming down the beach. He's jogging, and he watches him for a while, and he's thinking, what in the world's going on? And he sees him, back and forth with this bucket, and there's literally, tens upon tens of starfish. He's not even making a dent in it. And finally, the guy comes up to him and says, what are you doing? Where's your parents? What do you think you're doing? He says, oh, I'm taking these starfish back and putting them into the water. And the guy says, have you looked around? Do you see how many starfish there are? He goes, this isn't going to matter. And the little kid looks down into his bucket. He looks up at the man and he says, it matters to this one. And we're the this one. I know it seems like you have big lives and there's so much going on. But God's got it. He's got the timing of it. He controls the timing of it. Because God can put you in the right place at the right time.